Yeah, I don't know why that is. I think all the seasons, even that first season with Martin, I was going to say Martin Clunes, but it's not Martin Clunes.
Martin
Who's
Freeman.
Bilbo? That's it, Martin Freeman. The Responder Hobbit, Martin Freeman. I think called, I don't know, Brandon or something like that.
Barney.
But Barney, oh God, my brain is absolutely dying.
True Love on ITVX. No, Channel 4. It's on Channel 4. Sorry. Apologies, Channel 4.
Sorry, I do need to fire the Nepo baby alarm.
The Sixth Doctor, I believe. Have I got that right? Seventh Doctor. The Seventh Doctor. Jack Dawkins has been transplanted to Australia and it's
No,
in
New York.
New York, is it? Okay. So he's
No,
in.
okay. Maybe I might be wrong.
I've just double checked and it is set in Australia. It's also made by an
You start
Australian.
again.
This podcast was recorded remotely and contains adult themes and language.
Hello and welcome to TV DNA. My name's Adam Hemming and this is our watch list episode. Later on, I'm going to be chatting to Neil Sheppek and doing the next installment of our Hooniversity challenge. But right now, I've been joined by Damien Cooper.
Hello.
How you doing, Damo?
I'm all right, thanks. A little bit of behind the scenes. This is an early morning Saturday record, guys. Such is our commitment to the pod. We've got out of our beds early on a Saturday.
Yeah, we had so much to cover with True Detective and the Emmys results last time around. We didn't get to talk about other stuff we've been watching and what we've got coming out in the next week. So, Damo, what have you been watching?
I've been a busy boy in the what week and a half. So obviously, True Detective, make sure you listen to our episode about that. Phenomenal. Can't say any more than that. I know you also watched this, Adam, the season finale of Fargo, which was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I don't think I made any notes on this one, but that final scene in that show was just brilliant and summed up kind of so many of the different themes within the show. Yeah, I thought it was excellent.
It made me wonder if that is, it says in the kind of legend before each episode, out of respect to the families and the people that have been affected by these kind of real life, crazy horror crime stories, how much that one was real. What do you reckon? Do you reckon that was just kind of there artistically, or do you think there could have been an element of truth to it?
I have just taken that opening statement that this is all based on true stories as a fiction.
Okay.
Because it's just so bonkers that it can't all be based on real life, can it?
I mean, long-term listeners might know that I occasionally help the police with their inquiries, and some of the scenarios that we do in training police and various law enforcement agencies in their interview techniques are absolutely mental, and they are always based on real cases.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. I think something's going to have to be really special to knock this off my number one show of the year. I mean, we're only in January, but I'm making that bold claim now. I thought it was utterly superb from beginning to end and not really promoted very much. So it kind of landed without much fanfare and people may not have got to see it. But it's a huge recommendation from us, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I think all the seasons, even that first season with Martin, I was going to say Martin Clunes, but it's not Martin Clunes.
Martin
Who's
Freeman.
Bilbo? That's it, Martin Freeman. The Responder Hobbit, Martin Freeman. I mean, that didn't get much fanfare over here either, but they get big names every series. And maybe it's different across the pond. So, American listeners, please let us know if we're even remotely correct about this. But yeah, we hardly get any promotion for it here. And it's always, I mean, at its worst, I think Fargo is still a pretty good show, but occasionally is exceptional.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether it, because it was originally on Netflix, wasn't it? Fargo, and then Prime acquired it.
Okay, that sounds about right. Yeah.
So maybe it's, you know, it's not one of the Prime originals. So maybe that's one of the reasons. But yeah, it's definitely an incredible show and people should watch it.
Definitely. Another incredible show that people should watch that has started on Netflix is The Brother Son. We've talked about this previously. I still need to watch the final episode. I think it's another really, really good show. It kind of focuses on the East Asian American experience. Again, we talked about Beef and other shows, but it's different, obviously, as you would expect. I think this is another really well written, well acted, well shot, 8-episode show that should be on people's lists.
Yeah, I mean, it starts off as this martial arts comedy, but shit gets real around about episode 5. And there's some nice moments of drama within the show as well. But yeah, really well crafted, I thought. It just drops the one-liners in there at the right moments, I think. And some of it is really, really very funny. And just the fight sequences, the one at the golf club, incredible.
And that's one shot. I won't go into spoiler territories, but everything that's happening on the ground floor, I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then we cut into the drive where the balls have gone, so to speak. And I think, oh, this is cool. And then it turns around and comes back up. It must be a drone that is being filmed on. And this phenomenal, really intricately choreographed, what, 5-minute fight scene, maybe even 7-minute fight scene. It's all done in one take. It's just brilliant.
It is really incredible stuff. I mean, there is some suspension of disbelief required at moments within this show, but it's really good fun and I think quite addictive. I devoured the last 3 episodes pretty much back to back. And Michelle Yeoh, superb, as you would expect.
So good. And I think, the actors that play, I haven't got them to hand right now, but the actors that play Charles and Bruce, her sons, are brilliant. And my question for you is this, Blood Boots, how English do you think that actor is? Because he is very much doing an English accent for American audiences.
I loved Blood Boots. I thought he was just so brilliant. When he came in, it was just like such a great injection of this new character. I mean, all the characters I thought were really well crafted, like really interesting and different. It just felt like quite a fully rounded show.
I think it's definitely at the top of our recommend lists, including Fargo. The next thing I've watched, I don't know if you've managed to catch any of it yet, Adam, is AFCON, the African Cup of Nations. I don't know if you watched Egypt versus Ghana. My goodness me.
I haven't, no.
I'd watched the highlights of Egypt versus Ghana. An absolute madness. There's been some phenomenal games. I think there's a Cabo Verde free kick that I think rivals Roberto Carlos is, I think, from the tournoi in 97. And if you think how low down they are in the international ratings compared to a lot of their competitors, as always with the African Cup of Nations, maybe a little bit more than the Euros, but there can be some really quite phenomenal upsets. So, yeah, that's been good. I've also watched Gladiators. Obviously, episode 2, as time of recording, will drop tonight on BBC. It is 90s camp. I was talking to a friend of mine who also was a big fan of the Gladiators back in the 90s, and he feels that the Gladiators aren't quite mean enough. It's all just a bit too friendly. But it's good fun. Like I said, my only qualm is originally it was John Fashanu and Ulrika Johnson were our hosts with the mosts. This time it's Bradley Walsh, who is brilliant, by the way. He's perfect for that sort of show. And his son, I think, Brandon or something like that.
Barney.
But Barney. Yeah, I mean, we have a very strong opinion of Nepo babies on this show, but I believe that guy has not got a single presenting job that doesn't involve his dad. And there's a reason why. Why do we have 2 white men, one of them a Nepo baby? In the 90s, we had 1 Swedish woman and 1 black dude. Why have we gone back to 2 white guys? Can we just have it? Especially because the Gladiators are a little bit more diverse. Maybe not as diverse as they were in the 90s. I'd need to check. But it feels like that is a little bit of a step back. But that being said, if it was possible to buy tickets to see series 2 of The Gladiators, I think I would go and watch it live like I did in the 90s.
I completely agree. And it is unfortunate because Bradley Walsh is so good that you can't help but compare the two of them. I also really enjoyed the fact that Mark Clattenburg is now the referee.
Did you see when he was blowing the whistle for the big final one? He brought it up and you could see on his bicep a little tattoo that said Euro 2004 or whatever it was.
My other qualm about it was that the commentator said when they were introducing Fire, which I don't think is a great name for a gladiator, he said not many can catch fire. And with enough gasoline or a flamethrower, then pretty much anyone can catch fire. But also, one of the new games is called Collision, I think, and it's they have to race across a bridge, and the gladiators have to swing on trapezes to try and knock them off. I just thought it made the gladiators look a little bit silly, because by the time they got to the middle of the bridge, the contenders could just sort of palm them away.
Yeah, I agree. That was weak. Because there's another one where they have to get past the gladiator to press a button in the middle of the arena. And that also seemed a little bit rubbish, because after 2 seconds, they have to let go. So you could just brute force your way to it. I think, yeah, the newer activities aren't quite as good as the retro ones.
But it's definitely great to have it back on the screens. And I think, you know, people will enjoy it. I might try and watch the next episode with the kids.
Yeah, I reckon they'll enjoy it, right? It's broad enough for everyone to kind of get into, I think. It's good for all ages. And I think if you have no ability to speak English, I mean, you can still absolutely watch this and get what the hell is going on. I also watched on Apple Killers of the Flower Moon, the Scorsese film that lasts 3.5 hours with De Niro, DiCaprio. Who else is in there? There's loads of people. Meth Damon is in there too. I think it's a really good film. There's a really nice coda with Scorsese. It's really interesting. Leo is great. De Niro is great. I don't really have any qualms about performances. I think it's a good story, well told. I think it's definitely going to be in the front runner for Oscars, because they've released it just in time, I think, to be eligible for this year's selection. Will it win? I don't know. Of what I've seen so far, I think it edges Oppenheimer for me. But I also really loved Oppenheimer, another 3-hour-plus film.
Yeah, I am looking forward to watching this one. I haven't gotten around to it yet. I haven't watched very many films at all. I didn't see Barbenheimer. So when the Oscar noms come out, I'm going to have a lot of films to get caught up on.
You won't regret it with Killers of the Flower Moon. I will say that a lot of people I know haven't been able to watch it in one go, because it's 3.5 hours long. So there's been people pausing it, coming back to it a day or so later. We pretty much watched it in one go, bar maybe a break here or there for 5-10 minutes. But yeah, a lot happens. But there were points at which I thought, would this have been better served as a series, a limited series, rather than a long film? And we could have really got some more depth and detail in a very interesting story. But I still think it's a very good film. I started watching The Kitchen on Netflix. I had to stop 25 minutes in, starring Kano Robinson, who also plays Sully in Top Boy. There's a lot of other people from Top Boy you might recognize. I'm assuming it's probably the same cast and director, directed by Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah, it's good. The premise is there is no social housing anymore in the UK. It's kind of in a Black Mirror-esque near future. And there's this one place called The Kitchen, which is the final bit of social housing in London, quite central, it seems. And the powers that be are trying to knock it down. And they are coming to try and snatch people away from The Kitchen. But obviously the residents will not be moved. And it's a very vibrant, interesting, diverse enclave in London. It's interesting. You see scenes through there, and there are literally people from all over the world in this small part, as you would expect from London, a very diverse place. Although it does seem that we have focused very much on the Afro-Caribbean community in this multiple ethnic area. So I wonder if we will have any characters who are not black have any lines in The Kitchen. Just out of curiosity, there's no judgment there. But given that it's so diverse when people walk through it, no one else seems to have any actual lines. But, you know, it's not a bad thing. And the final thing I'm bringing in is that it's not stuff that I've really been watching. It's what I've deemed background watching, i.e. it's in the living room and I can't escape it. And that is Traitors and Traitors Uncloaked. They are both in my life now. I let Raluca know that Traitors Uncloaked existed, and now that is something that is watched. But the reason why I mention all of this is because Raluca is watching another show on, what's it on? I think it's on Prime, called The Tunnel, which is from a few years ago. I don't know if you watched it when it was on. I think it's very much like The Bridge, except it's England and France. So something happens in the channel. So you've got a mix of Calais cops and London cops working together. But the cast is Interesting. We've got Stannis Baratheon. We've got Benjen Stark. Who else have we got? I've only watched bits of it, but I'm like, oh, that's whoever. And Rigger's like, what? Oh my God, no way. So yeah, it's a great cast. 2013 to 2018. So there's a big old cast, and there are a hell of a lot of episodes to watch. It's won lots of awards.
It was based on The Bridge, in fact.
Yeah.
So yeah, inspired by. I do remember this coming out. I don't think I ever watched it. Good shout.
Obviously, Stephen Delane, who was Stannis Baratheon. Oh, your mate, someone who you love, a very young Jack Loudon.
Nice.
Very young. And yeah, lots of other guys and gals that you would recognize. That's it. That's my list. How about you,
Good.
Adam?
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, I've watched a few new shows. So I started After the Flood on ITVX. This is the police crime drama, and it starts with this really impressive flood sequence, like the recreation of that. I don't know how they managed to do it. But yeah, it's basically that's the story. A female police officer played by Sophie Rundle is pregnant, and she's sort of trying to save people who are trapped in this flood. I mean, never mind the baby in the car seat floating down a fast-moving current. It's the horror of having your displaced sister-in-law's family coming to stay with you that really hits. She looks good as a PC. You know, we talked previously about Catherine Kayward and how she sort of owns that uniform. I think Sophie Rundle does a good job in this as well. And she's, you know, she's pregnant. So the sort of drama is, can she solve a case before her maternity leave starts? Sadly, baby brain does kick in a couple of times and she makes some questionable choices. But her husband, man, who's also a detective, Water Douchebag.
Is that his name?
No, just, yeah, he's horrendous and hopefully comes to a sticky end. I think there's some good intrigue in here, which overcomes some of the minor flaws. I haven't watched beyond the first episode yet, just because I've got loads on my list, but I might well go back to this. So if that's your bag, After the Flood might be worth a watch. I also started something on Netflix that popped up again on my algorithm. It's called Boy Swallows Universe, and it's an Australian show. And you know it's an Australian show because they use the words rack off fairly early on. But young Eli has a mute brother, an ex-junkie mum, and a stepdad he suspects of dealing drugs again, played by Travis Fimmel. His babysitter, driving instructor, is an ex-con who may or may not have murdered someone and has set him up with a prison pen pal, which is the most genius part of the whole thing, I think. There's a disturbing scene involving a bully, a rat, and a samurai sword, and that's the setup for what I expect will be a fairly key encounter at the end of the first episode. Again, only watched one episode of this so far, but I'm going to go back and watch a bit more of this one. I think it's quirky. There's moments where, I mean, I think it's his brother who's an artist, but yeah, there's some really interesting moments where it goes into sort of flights of fantasy.
Yeah, Raluca's been watching that. So I've seen a little bit of it as I've been in and out of the room. It is very Australian, even in the palette on the screen. It's your kind of your classic slightly burnt yellow, orange hue to everything. Yeah, it's interesting. Travis Fimmel is doing a lot of stuff back in Australia now. He briefly tried America and now he's back to doing a lot of leading a lot of Australian dramas. So I'm curious to see how he does, because obviously, as I said before, I'm a big fan of him as Ragnar Lothbrok in Vikings, but I've not quite got on board anywhere near as much as I did with his other performances.
I think it was Black Snow was the one I watched towards the end of last year, which he was in. Yeah, this is a very different role, but yeah, he's quite good in this, I think. I've continued on with Criminal Record on Apple TV Plus. I think the third episode came out. But Cush Jumbo, I mean, there's this scene where, again, minor spoiler, but she's in a confrontation with Rongan, and her fight scene acting in that is phenomenal. Really, really worth watching. Lots of London in this. We see Hackney Downs quite a lot. And there's a really fantastic lawyer character played by Aisha Khala. Very, very much a straight talking, say it how it is. She's superb in this as well. And then you've got Peter Capaldi being quite sinister. Criminal Record, I think, is really well made. All of the Apple TV Plus money and class that they bring to their shows, and a good, intriguing conflict between the two lead characters. I've finished a couple of bits. Actually, there's one more that I'm continuing with, which is True Love. Again, another crime drama in a way, but this is a group of people in their later years of assisting each other with ending their lives. It does really paint a bleak picture of growing old. It's definitely not something that I'm looking forward to. It does a really good job of showing what might drive people to take such drastic action. I mean, this is why I spend time with Gen Zers like you, Damo. There's good emotional, comedic, and dramatic beats placed throughout the show. It packs a powerful punch. Sue Johnston and Lindsay Duncan are the other names that I couldn't remember last time I spoke about this. But all four of them, Peter Egan and Clark Peters, give flawless performances. So yeah, True Love on ITVX is also something that I would recommend. No, Channel 4? It's on Channel 4. Sorry, apologies, Channel 4. And then a couple of bits that I finished For All Mankind, which again is on Apple TV Plus. I thought that was going to be the final season, but they've set up potential for a fifth season. And there's definitely some unresolved stories. I mean, if you've made your way this far into the four seasons of For All Mankind, I think you'll agree it was a fairly solid season. I just don't know how they keep some of the characters going into a fifth season, because they have to age them up by a decade every single time. Oof. That bit is quite hard to take in a lot of ways. But the other show that I really enjoyed was Echo, a really beautiful story of redemption, well told through the beliefs and rituals of the Choctaw Nation. It shares some themes with the brother's son, I think. Can someone who's committed extreme violence be redeemed? And kind of when can non-violent remedies be used to settle conflicts? But Vincent D'Onofrio, never short of immense and captivating throughout the whole thing. But yeah, it's only 5 episodes, Disney Plus. I think it's a good return to form for the MCU. And that is what I've been watching.
Amazing. Eclectic as always, Adam.
Yeah. There's some stuff coming out this week that I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So the first one is Fire Country. This is a procedural drama, which is going to be out on Sky Witness and Now TV on the 24th of January. I'll give you the synopsis. Bode Donovan, a young convict seeking redemption, joins an unconventional prison release firefighting program in Northern California, where he and other inmates are partnered with elite firefighters to extinguish massive, unpredictable wildfires. 5 years ago, Bode burned down everything in his life, leaving town with a big secret. Now he's back with the rap sheet of a criminal and the audacity to believe in a chance for redemption. It stars Max Thierryo, Stephanie Arcilla, and Billy Burke. And the interesting fact I've got on this one is that I heard some stats about viewership in the United States of America. And other than sort of sporting events and other non-scripted drama stuff, Fire Country was the most watched show in the United States.
Wow. I mean, so my question is with this, and maybe we'll get into it, or at least it will be explained early doors. This prison release firefighting program, I'm assuming you can't be put on it if you've been jailed for arson.
I mean, it would be a huge irony, wouldn't it, if that was his big secret?
Well, just because you said he burned down everything in his life, it makes me worry whether a lot of this show is about arson about.
Oh, very good.
That's not my joke. I've stolen that from Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of Were-Rabbit, which is also something you should watch.
I did watch it years ago. I'm sure, pretty sure I've watched all of the Wallace and Gromits, but I was talking to, we were playing a game with the kids, quiz game, and they'd never heard of Wallace and Gromit.
Oh my Lord. Kids these days, eh?
Got some education of my children to do.
Well, I tell you what, don't try and educate them with this sexy beast on the 25th of January on Paramount Plus. So it's the prequel to the hit film, and it traces the relationships between friends and thieves, Gal Dove and Don Logan, who together become involved in London's criminal world during the 1990s. Yes, please. Oh my God, 1990s hairstyles, fashion, love it. Gal begins a romance with the seductively alluring adult film star, Dee Dee, which proves to be a dangerous endeavor. And it stars James McArdle, Tamsin Grieg, and Sarah Green, who is Bibby in Bad Sisters. I mean, if anyone tries to tell you that they're not going to watch Sexy Beast, the only answer is no, 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 no.
Yeah, this is obviously the prequel to that Ray Winston film, set not long before that film actually takes place. The one draw for me really is Sarah Green, because I think she's brilliant in Bad Sisters, and I really like her as a performer. So this is a maybe for me. I might give the first one a go and see what I think.
Can I just double check? This isn't Sarah Green, former BBC, former Blue Peter presenter Sarah Green, is it?
No, very much a different Sarah Green.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to check, just because another 90s reference for those who care. But what is coming out on that same day that I am super excited about? The promotion is already going mad on Netflix, and that is Griselda. So, also on the 25th of January, the savvy and ambitious Colombian businesswoman Griselda Blanco creates one of the most profitable cartels in history. Queenpin, innovator, mother, killer. Griselda is a woman of substance from creative minds who brought you Narcos, and it stars Sofia Vergara, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about this one. I think this is all based on a true story. I listened to a podcast called Drunk Women Solving Crimes, and they covered the story of this character in one of their episodes, and it just sounded like a fascinating story. So I'm quite excited about this one.
It's set in Miami, Florida, and it is, as you can imagine, the coke scene in Miami, I think in the 80s, is it, or could be early 90s, was rife.
Well, what I am very much looking forward to on the following day, the 26th of January on Apple TV Plus, is Masters of the Air. Long awaited. I think we thought we were getting this last year, but it is from the team behind Band of Brothers and the Pacific. But this time during World War II, airmen risked their lives with the 100th Bomb Group, a brotherhood forged by courage, loss, and triumph. And check out this cast: Austin Butler, Sawyer Spielberg, Callum Turner, Barry Keoghan, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Callum Turner was in the first series of that
Capture.
Capture. That's the one. And I really like him. I think he's great.
Sorry, I do need to fire the Nepo baby alarm because we kind of almost skipped over that. Sawyer Spielberg is Steven Spielberg's son. So I can't imagine how he's managed to get into this production. He must have gone through the audition, sent off a tape, got called into the room, read with everyone, callbacks. So, I mean, amazing. Fair play to him. Should you have a look on his IMDb?
I'll
Oh,
do
he's done a lot of he's done a few things, all I think pretty much involved with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, there we go. Well, the final show that's out on the same day, 26th of Jan, on Prime Video is Expats. And this is a Nicole Kidman show set against the complex tapestry of Hong Kong residents. Expats depicts a multifaceted group of women after a single encounter sets off a chain of life-altering events that leaves everyone navigating the intricate balance between blame and accountability. Yeah, the trailer for this looks decent. It looks like it's going to be quite an interesting show. Also stars Ji Young Yoo and Jack Houston. And that's, coming out on Prime Video on the 26th, which I think is Friday.
Sweet. So I was just trying to see what I recognized Ji Young Yoo's name from. I actually often when we do this, there's a couple of shows I think, oh, that looks interesting. And then a couple I think there's absolutely nothing I'm interested in. But I have to say, I think out of this bunch, I'm interested in all of these. Obviously, Fire Country is at the bottom of the list, but given its popularity in the States, I guess it garners a watch. But I think I'm going to try, even though next week is quite busy, to give these all a go.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a long time since I've watched any sort of procedural show like Fire Country. So, just purely for curiosity, I might give it a go. But yeah, definitely the Masters of the Air and Griselda, I think, are the ones that I'm most excited about this week. But I'm curious, certainly, about the others. A bit of news for you, Damo. Isabella Merced has been cast as Dina in The Last of Us Season 2. More casting news for The Last of Us. They're drip feeding us all of this stuff. Is Dina a key character in the game?
Yes, Dina is a significant member of the cast. I think we saw her briefly in season one. I think Bradley and I were saying like it was like a very brief. Someone was listening in to a conversation that Ellie was having with who was it? I can't remember now, but there was like something got knocked over and we saw someone hiding behind a pillar listening in. And Bradley and I were like, oh, that's a nice touch because that is Dina.
Okay, cool. And the other bit of casting news is that Carrie Coon has joined Jason Isaacs, Parker Posey, and Michelle Monaghan in season three of The White Lotus. I'm a huge Carrie Coon fan. So if you haven't seen The Leftovers, such a brilliant show. We've also got Natasha Rothwell returning from season one. She's the returning character this time around. And I've got other bits of news that I haven't shared with you previously, Damo. Quite exciting. So did you ever play Twisted Metal, the game?
No, I didn't, but I know roughly what it's about. Yeah.
I think last year in the States this came out. There's an Anthony Mackie action comedy based on that video game, and it's been picked up by Paramount Plus. So that's where it's going to appear on our screens. I don't know if there's a date for it yet, but it also stars someone from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Thomas Hayden Church. There's a clown character called Sweet Tooth, who's voiced by Will Arnett. And the showrunner is Michael Jonathan Smith from Cobra Kai. This is something that I'm quite excited about. I think it got decent reviews in the States. But yeah, it's going to be sometime before April we will get Twisted Metal.
Without wanting to go back to yet another 90s reference, it also stars Neve Campbell.
Oh, there you go. Amazing. And the other one that's got a release date is The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, starring Noel Fielding, which is coming out in March on Apple TV+. And again, a whole host of people, British actors that you will recognise. Hugh Bonneville's in there, but a lot of comedic actors as well. Again, Tamsin Grieg, mentioned her a couple of times already. Joe Wilkinson, looks like a decent cast of people involved in that.
It looks also like the kind of show that can be sold around the world, because it's going to be very, although like very English or British, should I say, very British comedy sensibility. But I think it's going to be interesting and funny enough for the rest of not just the Anglosphere to want to watch it too.
And then the final bit of news that I haven't shared is something that I know that you've been keen to learn. And that's the release date for Trigger Point Season 2, starring Vicky McClure. That's going to be on Sunday, the 28th of January. I might watch the first one just to see if it's still as bad.
Oh, God, why? I did wonder when that was going to be in the main news, but that wasn't worthy of an in-depth news.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much all my news. Anything else from you?
Did we cover that Our Flag Means Death has been cancelled?
No, I don't think we did, actually. And it is a real shame. It's particularly gutting because we haven't had the second season out here yet. So, you know, there'll be a sort of bittersweet watch of that. To be fair, I didn't think the first season was amazing. It was fine. It was a good watch. It wasn't quite as comedic as I thought it was going to be. But I did enjoy the performances. I can kind of see possibly why.
Yeah, I think the other thing I noticed, I only ever watched maybe an episode and a half, because I am a fan of Rhys Darby. It looked like it cost a lot of money to make. And so I guess it needs to do well to remain being made, doesn't it? So I guess that's probably one of the reasons why it didn't quite make the viewership for the amount of bunts that it cost.
Yeah, probably the case. Grant, I think that's us done then. So we're going to be back fairly soon with our next True Detective special. We're covering that episode by episode. Still getting some good listens on our Mr. Bates versus the Post Office episode. So if you haven't yet listened to that, we can highly recommend checking it out. Very much in the news still. If you want to get in contact with us and let us know about what you've been watching, you can get in touch via the social media on @TVDNAPod, or you can email tvdnapod@gmail.com.
Brilliant. And just what I want to say, you're about to record the Hooniversity Challenge section with Neil now, aren't you?
Yeah.
And occasionally I have dropped in for that and got involved in the quiz. So I will say right now, all questions, my answer is the middle answer. And let's see if I can beat Neil.
Well, I can tell you now. You'd have got two right.
Okay, so two. I've got two. Can Neil beat two? Tune in, stay on the pod and see how Neil does.
Thanks, Damo. Great doing this with you. I'll see you soon.
All right, then. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to TVDNA, our Hooniversity Challenge. This week, we are talking about Sylvester McCoy, the Sixth Doctor, I believe. Have I got that right? Seventh Doctor. The Seventh Doctor. My name's Adam Hemming, and joining me is Neil Shepek. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Professor.
Yeah, it was curious, wasn't it? So the Doctor's companion, Ace, calls him the Professor. She interchanges it with Doctor.
It's like it's not all the time. I made a note that she called him the Professor, or at least she said to other people, this is the Professor. But she does also call him the Doctor. And having only watched one episode, I haven't worked out exactly what the reasons are behind that.
No. Yeah, I watched all three of this arc. So we watched Survival. It's actually the final arc for Sylvester McCoy, the last of his stories.
It was written by Rona Munro, who, of course, is a well-known playwright, has written a lot for the stage. And, yeah, it told the story of these cat people.
That's a one-off, I guess, venture into Doctor Who. It is a little bit weird. It's great to see the Master back, but the Master's involvement, although I've only watched the first of the three episodes, so, Adam, you might have more knowledge as to where the Master fits into all of this.
Yeah. Yes. So, and I'm a little bit vague on Lost Three again, but essentially the Master has ingratiated himself with these cheetah people, this alien race, but also become infected by them, half turned into one of them, and is using, there's some element of the story whereby they can transport themselves from the cheetah planet to Earth. And when on Earth, they appear as normal house cats or animatronic cats. And then when in the other planet, they're more cheetah people. I'm sure I'm completely butchering the plot of this. And part of the reason for that is I did find it all a little bit, why don't you?
Yeah. Okay, so certainly for me that's only watched the first episode, the way I read it is that there are what look like stray cats who are abducting young people specifically, and they are being transported to some other universe or some other planet that is run by these cheetah people who dress up as cats. And the Master is involved in this. He's kind of giving orders as to, this is a good prey for you, or don't bother with them. So he's clearly involved in some way. And Ace has, I suppose, said to the Doctor, oh, I'd really like to go see my friends. And then they go back and her friends aren't there anymore. And then they discover this. And then Ace is one of the young people that is transported to this planet. And then eventually the Doctor follows. I think that's probably the startup of all this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the following two episodes really involve them trying to get back to Earth, essentially. But others of them do get infected with this sort of, that they're almost turning into these cat people. And so they have these yellow eyes and they start to develop fangs. And that happens to Ace as well as the Master during the next two episodes. It was, I think, Hale and Pace are in the first episode, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I loved that. I'm of an age where I really enjoyed Hen and Pace in their day. And yeah, that kind of, I guess, cameos was really enjoyable.
They tell a joke, don't they, about being chased by something, and it all quite, it fits in with the storyline. And but yeah, it's really funny to have them as guest stars.
Yeah, and also there was something about the first episode that made me think of The Hunger Games. It did feel a little bit, particularly with that it was young people that were basically fighting for their lives. And once we eventually get into the planet where they are, they're all trying to survive overnight and away from the leopard people.
There's the sort of thing of them being hunted. There's a comedy scene later on where the Doctor's trying to persuade everyone that if you just stand still, they won't bother you. Apparently they like the chase. So if you're running away, they'll chase you. And they only really eat you if they're hungry and all this sort of stuff.
Bloody cats.
But yeah, I was a little bit vague of it all. But the third episode is very much the last temptation of Ace, is whether or not she's going to turn and succumb to her animalistic instincts, or whether humanity will prevail. But let's talk about Sylvester McCoy a bit. What did you think of him as a Doctor?
I think he was a fun Doctor. What's been awesome about going through this university revisitings is that regardless of his physical age, the Doctor is on a journey and, you know, goes through different versions of himself. And I think Sylvester McCoy was a really good, albeit brief, generation of the Doctor.
Yeah, he's channeling a little bit of Patrick Troughton, isn't he, in that kind of Charlie Chaplin-esque elements to what he's doing, the little sort of tip of the hat and stuff like that, and almost similar in stature, I think. I mean, I remember as a child being pretty horrified when Sylvester McCoy became the Doctor. But actually watching him back, I think I appreciate him that little bit more.
Yeah, and I do think that there are times for us to enjoy the kind of comedic clown-like side of the Doctor, which we're not... Well, we've seen a bit with the Russell T Davies era, but... Yeah, that is part of his character and part of his development. We've seen Doctors go through much darker storylines, and we've seen a lot more of their development. But looking back, I actually really enjoyed Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I think the writing, as I said earlier, was a little bit sort of young adult in this instance. Or the production even, not necessarily even the writing, more the production of it all. But yeah, I had a much... better opinion of Sylvester McCoy than I remembered having. I mean, interestingly, when I was reading up on him as the Doctor, his early sort of storylines were even more sort of comedic and sort of silly, I guess. And they tried in these later stories to make it that little bit darker. And he was kind of a manipulator of people and wouldn't necessarily share what he was thinking with others. He would just sort of maneuver them into the positions that he needed them to be in order to accomplish what he was trying to do. And I could see a little bit of that within this storyline as well, of him sort of knowing stuff or understanding stuff and not necessarily sharing that with the people he was talking to.
And I do think it is interesting that he was the last Doctor of his era. Sorry if this is a question, but I haven't looked up the answer. There was a big gap after Sylvester before they did the one-off with Paul McGann, and then there was another big time period before Russell T Davies took over. And I guess the writers and the showrunners hadn't found how to keep the Doctor relevant, whereas I definitely think Russell T Davies has now, both when he initially took over and also now with Chitikawa. So, yeah, I think that makes Sylvester McCoy a very important and interesting Doctor as far as looking at the Hooniverse.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know those dates either, but when we do our Paul McGann episode, we'll have a look at what that gap was in that time period. Yeah, I did make a note. This was the last Doctor Who that anyone saw in a long time. And I think that maybe they were trying to be more relevant towards a younger audience with these stories and with this sort of production style, I guess. One other thing I wanted to point out, one of Ace's friends, Shreela, was played by Shakuntala Ramani, who's an actress that I've worked with at The Space. She did an R&D with us quite some time ago. So, yeah, it was brilliant. She's obviously much younger in this episode than she was when I worked with her. But it was brilliant to see her on the screen in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Louise Jameson and...
Yeah, we'll have to try and get them as all together on the pod at some point. Are you ready for some questions then about Sylvester McCoy? Some more facts and questions?
Yeah, just before we do, because it seems that, well, I feel, I've been speaking for a while about females in Doctor Who and the companions, and for the first time, Ace was a companion who was a strong female, and I do think that that's something, but Ace as a character was a major development, I think, for Doctor Who. And obviously, Russell T Davies has gone further with making Doctor Who more diverse, etc. But I do feel like Ace was the beginning of that.
Yeah, it's Sophie Aldred is the name of the actress who played Ace. She had quite a big career within children's TV stuff.
Yeah. Was she Blue Peter?
I don't think she was Blue Peter, but she did present quite a few kids' TV shows and things like that. Grant, well, let's get into the Hooniversity Challenge element then. So Sylvester McCoy was born Percy James Patrick Kent Smith.
So wow, Sylvester that McCoy wasn't even a question. That's just a fact. Okay, that blew my mind.
But he was born in Scotland to an Irish mother and an English father who tragically was killed in World War II before Sylvester was born. So at what age did Sylvester meet his father's family? Was it A, 13, B, 15, or C, 17?
Well, if I've learned nothing from Michael Ball, it's that you don't go for the middle. So I'm going to go 17.
17 is the correct answer. Very good.
Yay. Thank you, Michael.
I recorded with Damien earlier. And he's gone for the middle answer on every question, just to see if he can beat you. If he can beat you without hearing any of the questions. So that's 1-0 to you so far. Sylvester, or Percy, as he was at the time, worked in the box office of the Roundhouse for a time. All good actors should work in a box office at some point. But he was discovered there by Ken Campbell. And he performed in the Ken Campbell Roadshow as a stuntman character called Sylvester McCoy. What stunt did he perform? Was it putting a fork up his nose, stuffing ferrets down his trousers, or setting his head on fire?
I want it to be setting his head on fire.
Oh, well, this is this week's trick question, Neil. It was all three of them.
I mean,
he added the R later on because of the actor's superstition that a stage name with 13 letters was unlucky. So Sylvester McCoy became Sylvester McCoy. I think it was a journalist sort of incorrectly assumed that that was his real name. So he just sort of kept it on as his stage name going forward. Sylvester then also had quite a big career in kids' TV shows. So he appeared in Jigsaw, Tiswas, and Eureka, for those of an age that can remember such shows. But he was also in every episode of maths program Leapfrog. What was his character's name in Leapfrog? Was it A, Bert, B, Ernie, or C, Eric?
I don't know. I'm going to take a guess at Eric.
Oh, you went the wrong way. It was Bert. But Damien also didn't get that one right. So I actually saw Sylvester on stage when he played the fool to Ian McKellen's Lear. Mm. He also played Radagast in The Hobbit. But which role did he nearly land in The Lord of the Rings? Was it A, Bilbo Baggins, B, Gimli, or C, Saruman?
I'm pretty sure it's not Saruman. Okay, it's the middle answer, but I'm going to go for Gimli.
It wasn't. It was Bilbo Baggins. He was second choice. Second choice as Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah. Damn, Ian Holm.
So your final question then. In 1990, Doctor Who magazine readers voted him the best Doctor ahead of Tom Baker. He voiced two Doctor Who video games. How many audio dramas did he voice? Was it A, 10, B, 15, or C, 20?
I think his agent would have pushed for 20, so I'm going to go for 20.
It was the middle answer, I'm afraid. It was 15. But yeah, it was quite a tough one, actually, finding questions for Sylvester McCoy. Not that I don't think he's an interesting person. I think he is. And, you know, he's very much an actor, I think, by, you know, evident by his time working with the RSC and on stage.
He's very theatrical, and I think he definitely gave a flavour to his time as the Doctor. I also loved, I know you love title sequences, Adam. I remember Colin Baker, his face in the title sequence was smiling, whereas Sylvester McCoy started off looking very serious and then smiled, which, I really enjoyed.
It felt very 90s. Obviously, it was late 80s. But the final bit where Doctor Who comes up on the titles is very much of that era. But yeah, you can't not watch the opening titles because the music is just so fantastic, right?
Yeah.
Our next Doctor is going to be Paul McGann, and obviously was only in the one TV movie. So we don't really have any choice. There's no sort of three arcs to pick from.
No, I mean, he does reappear later on, but yeah, as far as analysing him as a Doctor, yeah, you're absolutely right, it's just that movie.
So that's what we'll be watching next time round, if you want to watch along with us. Let's chat a bit about what else you've been watching, Neil.
I know we brought it up on what we're watching pods, but I've been watching Artful Dodger, and I've really been enjoying it. For a start, the two main performers, Thomas Brodie Salinger and David Treles, are both fantastic. It's a new setting. I think I've said in the past that the first thing I did in youth theatre was a show called Dodger, and was looking at kind of what happened after the events of Oliver Twist. Not a huge spoiler to say that Oliver appears in this series. I think I got to episode 7. I know, Adam, you've watched episode 1. I'm really enjoying it.
Wow, you've really powered through it. Yeah, I watched the first episode just yesterday, in fact, I think. And yeah, I quite enjoyed quite enjoyed it. So Jack Dawkins has been transplanted to Australia. And no, it's
New York.
New York, is it?
It's America.
Why did I think it was Australia?
Because...
Is it an Australian actress in it?
There's an Australian character in it.
Is there? Ah, okay. So he's...
No, in... no, okay. Maybe I might be wrong, but I've... maybe it's Australia. The first episode is called The Yankee Dodge. So I took it as America, but maybe it is Australia. There's only two characters that have Australian accents.
I've just double checked, and it is set in Australia. That's where they used to send the convicts. It's also made by... It's made by an Australian company, I believe, as well. So, yeah. But, yeah, he's a surgeon anyway. He's now a successful surgeon. He's put his life of crime behind him. And then his world gets rocked by the arrival of Fagin, who he takes on as his servant in order to protect his own secret. And then there's a young female character who is also an aspiring surgeon, but obviously because she's female in the 1850s, she's not allowed to perform any surgery or anything like that. She's expected to marry some upper-class twit, and there becomes this meet-cute between the two of them over a small boy's leg being broken.
Her name's Belle. She's the governor's daughter. And actually, they talk about this being a colony, so it does make a lot of sense that it is set in Australia. Belle is a very strong female character, and she finds ways of being able to get into the medical profession over the episodes. She's also, I can't remember the actress's name, but she's also a really strong character. And I don't think it would be a huge surprise that her and Jack/Dodger have chemistry.
It's Maya Mitchell is the name of the actress. I've just been looking at the rest of the cast. And it's Hal Cumpston who plays Oliver Twist when he shows up.
He's brilliant, by the way. I mean, yeah. It's not a particularly favourable representation of the character, but he is extremely good.
He was obviously in The Walking Dead, The World Beyond, and also Nine Perfect Strangers. It was the Nicole Kidman TV show a couple of years ago that he was in. And whilst there were issues with that show, I thought he was very good in it. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in future episodes. The other person that I saw in the first episode was Tim Minchin, and he doesn't get a huge amount to do in the first episode. Tim Minchin, for me, is one of those people, like, if you're going to have him in your show, let him be Tim Minchin. Do you know what I mean? In this first episode, I was a little bit disappointed by what he had to do and the kind of character he was playing. But yeah, I don't know whether he improves or gets more to do in later episodes.
Spoilers.
Okay, I'll wait and see then on that one. But yeah, I do love him as a performer, so
hopefully
I'll get to see a bit more of him doing better stuff. But I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, no, it's extremely good. Yeah, I'd hugely recommend. It's one of those watches that you're not necessarily hooked in the sense that you've got to watch the next episode. It doesn't mean it's not a narrative where you have to think and be engaged. It's something that you can have on and just enjoy when you just want a bit of time out. And sometimes that is the best TV.
Cool. Anything else you've been watching?
Well, I've been watching The Traitors, which I'm loving, and it's just amazing because it's changing its formula or evolving its formula from season one. I'm purely talking about the UK, and it's absolutely stunning. I'm absolutely loving it. And also, I don't know if this has been mentioned, but Traitors Uncloaked is a must watch. If you're into The Traitors, watch The Traitors Uncloaked, because they get in people who have been either banished or murdered, and they reveal to them who the traitors are and what's going on. If an hour of The Traitors or three episodes of Traitors each week isn't enough to quench your thirst, then Traitors Uncloaked, you get an extra hour, and I definitely recommend. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Damien's been bemoaning the fact that Reluca is watching The Traitors Uncloaked, but he's only got himself to blame because he pointed out that it was a thing that existed. I haven't had a chance to watch any of those yet. I really wanted to after one of the most recent banishments, But yeah, it is fantastic stuff. I thought that there's a kind of funeral episode recently that I thought was absolutely brilliant and really sort of nerve-wracking. But yeah, so people have suggested to me that I apply for this. And I think Izzy's also started an application when she was drunk one night. I've got a few thoughts on how to play the traitors. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah.
So don't let yourself be caught in one-on-one conversations, but also avoid very large groups. 3 or 4 people maybe is the optimum for any conversation that you have. Don't think you're going to catch 2 traitors the same way. What worked for one isn't going to work for all. So just because someone behaves similarly to someone who's been revealed to a traitor doesn't make them a traitor. Suspect everyone. Never believe anyone is faithful until you have evidence. And even then, question it regularly. They'll go, I'm convinced so-and-so's a faithful. And then they're completely and utterly not. Those would be my tenets if I was to go into the show. And also, finally, never trust a ginger. But yeah, it is great stuff. And I'm looking forward to the final 3 episodes, I think, this week, aren't they?
Is it the final 3? No, it can't be.
I think it's 12 episodes a series, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. So we've only got 3 left?
3 left, yeah.
Oh, wow. This week's going to be really interesting.
Well, I kind of covered most of what I've been watching with Damien earlier, but there was a couple of shows that I did want to sort of pick out. One is that I've literally only just started watching the first episode, but it was recommended to me by Matthew Jameson, and it's called Carol and the End of the World. This is on Netflix, and the synopsis of the show is, with a planet hurtling towards Earth, extinction is imminent for humans. While most feel liberated to pursue their wildest dreams, one quiet, uncomfortable woman stands alone, lost among the hedonistic masses. It's an animated show, and I really enjoyed the first little bit that I've watched of it so far. Martha Kelly voices Carol, but it's also got Michael Chernus as a voice actor, who I'm sure I've seen recently in something.
So it's a planet that is heading to Earth, not a meteor or an asteroid.
Yeah, a planet is hurtling towards Earth.
Wow.
That's what it says in the blurb anyway.
I'm not massive on my science, but for a planet to be heading towards Earth kind of goes against what I do understand about science. I get meteor or asteroid, but planets generally don't go off their course. They orbit a star.
It's I'm just looking on the Wikipedia page. It says a mysterious planet Kepler, ostensibly after Johann Kepler, hurtling towards Earth.
Wow. Okay.
My boy Otis is into his dwarf planet and all of that sort of stuff. Maybe it's a dwarf planet. But it's an adult animated apocalyptic comedy drama. Matthew rates it very highly. So I'm going to try and finish watching the first episode on my way home.
And where can I and our listeners access this?
It's on the Netflix.
And what's it called?
It's called Carol at the End of the World. And then the other thing I've been watching is Big Boys on Channel 4.
You love your Big Boys.
I do love my Big Boys very much. And the second series is kind of continuing where the first series left off. It's really, yeah, it is very, very funny. And if you've never watched it, then it's a really, really good Channel 4 comedy about young people at university. It's got a really strong core cast and some brilliant little guest cameos as well. That's another recommendation from me.
Thank you for the recommendation.
I think that's it from me for now.
I think that's probably it from me.
We've got the one bit of news we should probably say is that we've got the Oscar nominations coming, I think, on Tuesday of this week.
They're imminent. And I am very excited about that. Tonight, in fact, I'm watching Maestro with my flatmate that I suspect will be amongst the nominations. There was a bit of a hoorah about Bradley Cooper playing a Jewish character, but that disappeared quite quickly. I've heard it's an amazing film, so I'm really looking forward to watching that. And yeah, as soon as nominations come out, I will absolutely be chasing all of them. I'm pretty sure Oppenheimer will be very high in the nominations. I'd like to think Barbie won't be, but I have a suspicion that Barbie will get some nominations. No, exciting times.
I've got Killers of the Flower Moon downloaded and ready to go.
I haven't watched it yet. I think that stands a very good chance.
Brand, well, thanks for doing this, Neil. Lovely to see you as always. We will be back next week with True Detective, episode 2. And And I imagine we'll be talking about the Oscar nominations as well. But yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back soon.
Bye. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't care about this, but do you want to talk about Stranger Things 5? Or do you want to leave that to when you're with other people who like it?